Welcome to the Global Black Caucus Power to the People podcast. My name is Angela Fobbs, and I'm here today with Ben Cole. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Angela. How you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. It's been a surprising week this week. Very surprising. And we're going to talk about the George Floyd verdict.
Right, right. Today. We wanted to talk about the misogynoir episode, but you know, we got the verdict. For me, it was a lot faster than I expected. So I figure we should talk about that. So were you surprised? I think I was so surprised.
I was incredibly surprised. Like, I don't know what I was doing, but I got a news alert on my phone that the verdict came out, and I was like, And believe it or not, I just didn't even believe it. I was like, because it was like Derek Chauvin found guilty, and I was like, no, that this is wrong. Like, and so I I did another search. I'm like, just to verify. I wanted to see it in a video. You know, I wanted to see them giving the verdict. Mm-hmm. So I found the video, and I was like, okay, that's real. And I felt an immense relief. Mm-hmm. After I saw that, I don't know how other people might have felt. How did you feel?
I was shocked. My mom texted me. She's in Central Time. No, she's in Eastern Time in the U.S. And so she texted me, you know, about an hour before the verdict was given, or about an hour before it was read. And she said, "Hey, they're about to, release the verdict for George Floyd or for Derek Chauvin. They're about to read the verdict." And I was like, "Really?" I knew that the jury had been deliberating. I was expecting it to be, you know, much more than it was. I think they deliberated for 10 or 11 hours. I was expecting it to go into like a couple days of deliberation, and then. Really, I was expecting it to be a mistrial. I was not expecting
That's what I thought. It would be a mistrial. We'd have to start all over again.
Right. I was expecting a mistrial and like all of the jurors not being able to, agree on what the proper verdict would be, and then them having to change the charges, you know, and redo the trial. We got guilty on all three counts. And I was like, I mean, similar to you, I was just, I felt like a weight just kind of came off of me in that moment, you know?
Yeah.
I felt a bit of relief.
Yeah. And you know what? I didn't even know I was carrying around that weight.
Right.
We're so used to this violence from police and then them just being able to kill Black people and other people of color with immunity that, you don't even realize like it's just weighing you down all the time.
Yeah.
But I'm sure glad that this is over.
I remember in 2016, shortly after I moved to Cologne, that was when Philando Castile was killed. And if you remember back, his partner, like his girlfriend or his wife, like videotaped the thing, but she didn't videotape the actual shooting, but she videotaped like as he was bleeding and dying. And I remember watching that video and I got really emotional and I was crying and I called my mom and I was like, "Mom, what do we do? Like, you know, what is it that you're supposed to do? He didn't do anything. Like, he was just in his car and they shot him while he was in his car." Like, and I was crying. I'm afraid of like getting pulled over. I grew up in, you know, a relatively middle-class suburban, you know, white neighborhood where I was taught like, "Oh, the police are your friends, the police will help you and all that." And I was like, "Mom, no, they won't." You know, no, they won't. And I remember crying on the phone with my mom, and I don't cry that often. And, you know, when they read the verdict, my mom called me right away and she was crying and I was crying. And I was like, like that was the moment I went back to, was that conversation that we had, you know, about 5 years ago, and just being like, well, at least there's a chance for some justice, you know, or some accountability. This doesn't change the bias that and the horrible things that led to George Floyd being killed, but at least now I can be like, well, there's a chance for some accountability. So that was really good for me to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean the whole there, yeah. It's I'm sorry, I'm stumbling. I just
It's
it's
okay.
so I'm so glad that this was resolved in a way that was positive for America, for African Americans, for everyone. Because if it had if the verdict had been not guilty, I can't even imagine what would happen, you know? I don't even want to think about that so much, like the because there's all there was a whole lot of people, a whole lot of people that I had conversations with people and they would be like, and when I say people, I'm actually just meaning white people, so I just want to be clear, like it has to be guilty. I mean, it was obvious, and I'm just like,
It's not.
no, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, that we've seen so many videos from Rodney King, which was like the first major recording, you
Right, in
know.
the 1990s, yeah.
Yeah, and that was pretty obvious to me that the police were just
Right.
brutalizing
I
him.
watched that video a few weeks ago, and that was my first time ever watching the video. I knew about the Rodney King like incident and the Rodney King riots afterwards. That was my first time watching the video, and yeah, it was blatant. Like you had like four officers just beating this guy, and he was only just reaching out for help. Like
Yeah. But they didn't care because
right.
they were more interested in, you know, whatever it is police think about. I don't just for the record, like I don't hate the police. I just think that they do a lot of wrong things and they do a lot of criminal things.
Right.
And there should be no members of our society that can get away with doing crimes. Like, sorry.
That's really the core issue. Like I spent a lot of time, kind of just reading about the aftermath because I was curious of one, what was going to happen to the other officers who were also charged. So I spent a lot of time reading about that and just kind of whether or not that this sets a precedent in terms of like police qualified immunity that police have. It doesn't necessarily, but there were a lot of analysis saying that police officers and policing departments and police unions are probably going to circle the wagons now
Yeah.
after this, which means they're probably going to start criminalizing people recording them. So I don't know how we're going to deal with that. We're going to have to deal with that. But there's this idea though that they have that like, we just hate the police. It's like, no, we don't hate the police. The way we feel about it is that police have a special position in our society where they're entrusted with a special level of authority and a special level of of power.
Yes.
And we give that to them with the hope that they will use it justly and that they will use it judiciously and not just arbitrarily whenever they decide to, right? Only
Yes.
to enforce the law. And when we see that that doesn't happen, and we see time and time again that we seem to be targeted, or even if not intentionally targeted, that we seem to be unintentionally, met with this type of force and this type of violence more often than anyone else in our community. And then when that happens, that the people who do that don't get held responsible for that, then we start to lose faith in the system of policing. We start to lose faith that police officers do their jobs in good faith.
Yes.
And that's really the problem. We don't hate police. We just don't believe in you anymore as an institution.
No, not at all. I don't know if you think back to 2014 when Eric Garner was killed in a similar manner as George Floyd. And we had a video of that too.
Right. He was put in a headlock. Yeah.
Yeah. And they tried the exact same thing as far as the trial that somehow, okay, he had some medical conditions
Right.
and, you know, I don't know if they found any drugs in his system. I don't think so.
I don't think they
I
did,
don't think
no.
so. But, you know, like yes, if you have a medical condition and someone chokes you to death, you will die. If you don't have a medical condition and someone chokes you to death, you will die.
Right.
Like it's not related. These
Well,
two
like
things are not related.
my thing, because that was what I was really worried about, actually, with the trial. I thought that that would be what would get Chauvin off. I thought that that was what was going to at least hang the jury, because what the defense was saying at the like by that is saying, well, because like Derek Chauvin like could not have known that George Floyd had these other medical conditions, and he used just as much force as anyone else on the police department, or he used just as much force as he had always had, and he's a 20-something year veteran of the police force. So, it's really George Floyd's fault. He could not have possibly taken into account that George Floyd had a medical condition. My thought with that, and the prosecution didn't make this argument necessarily, I thought that they should have. But my argument would have been, well, as a police officer in a community, we know that people have different health conditions, right? We know that some health conditions are unseen. We know that people can be struggling with drug addictions, whatever. It is your job as a police officer not to be able to read every individual person, right? And be able to tell if someone has a disability or not, or has a condition or not. You're not going to be able to do that. But as you are applying force, or as you are going about your job and doing these things, to keep that in your mind and be like, hey, I need to, like only apply appropriate force to, someone's like neck, because I don't know if they have a breathing condition or a heart condition or something like that. I'm gonna make sure not to pinch this guy's artery or something like that while I'm doing this, because yeah, he might have a cardiovascular condition or a blood condition, something like that. That should be in the thinking of our police officers as they're doing their jobs, because you
Yes.
never know when you come across someone who might have some sort of condition and therefore would be more likely to succumb to an injury than somebody else who doesn't have that condition. The prosecution didn't make that argument, but the jury seemed to not have bought the argument anyway. But I just, for me personally, I want to make that something that we shout out into our communities, that cannot be an excuse that, oh, well, this person had a health condition. Well, maybe, but you are also, we know that people have health conditions,
Yes,
it's
it's
not.
not weird for someone to have a health condition. It's there's
Right.
millions of people that suffer from diabetes, high blood pressure, seizures, I mean
Right.
any number of things, and you don't see it when you look at their face. You
Right.
don't these are things and it does, and there's also people who suffer from conditions and that they don't know they have them.
Right.
So we have to treat everyone with care.
Right.
Not just, well, you look healthy, so I guess I can beat you. You
Right.
know,
I think
that's.
that's also part of the thing. It's like, I did like that the chief of police who testified talked about, the motto of the Minneapolis Police Department, which was something like to serve with something and protect with care, or something like that. But it was like to serve and protect with compassion. And obviously Minneapolis police have not shown that they actually do that very often. This is not the first Black person who's been killed by Minneapolis police, but at least as a principle, like that is what I expect from our police officers, to be compassionate, to have some level of compassion and care for the people, even the quote unquote bad guys, as we kind of talked about and deconstructed last week in our last episode. But even when you're like engaging with the bad guy, well, one, it's not your job as a police to decide who's the bad guy or not.
It
That's
is
the courts.
not.
But to engage with everyone that you come across in these situations with compassion. I understand sometimes tensions get high, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But once you've gotten the situation under control, which they did have under control, they had it under control within a minute of that video showing, once you have the situation under control, then that's when you need to stop your anger and be like, all right, what are the needs of everybody in the situation, and how do we handle this situation compassionately? Because ultimately, you're policing the members of your community. You know what I mean? You're not
Yes.
policing some horrible group of non-human, monsters. You're policing people.
Yes, that is the this is why people, Black people, are afraid of the police. It's not because we're all up to something. It's because they don't care. Like,
Right.
they just look at you and see that you're not white, so you have to be doing something
Right. They
wrong.
don't see the humanity in us. That's ultimately the problem.
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen on Netflix, there's this new movie with Idris Elba. It's called Concrete Cowboy. Have you seen it or heard about it?
I think I've heard about it, but honestly, I haven't watched much lately. I've been a
Okay.
little too
Right,
busy.
you've been busy campaigning.
Yeah.
But when you get some time, it's a great movie. It's about 2 hours long, I think. I don't know. Also, I don't know why every movie is 2 hours long nowadays. Yeah.
Because, well, it could be 4 hours long. It could be Zack Snyder's Justice League
Right.
cut,
Yeah.
you
I wanted
know.
to watch that, and then I heard it was 4 hours. I was like, nah, I'm
Yeah, I
okay.
mean,
Like, I'm not gonna do
4 hours is ridiculous. That's
it.
I want to watch it, but here's the thing, that the DC universe kind of sucks when it comes to film. So the idea of I like the Justice League. I mean, as a kid, I was a comic book person. I like the Justice League,
Yeah.
but how they interpret it these days, it's just terrible. I mean, it's
Yeah, I
just
mean,
terrible.
I kind of see that too. Like, I tend to like DC more because the storylines are a bit darker and, a bit grimier and not so, perfect as in Marvel. And, I really like DC, but like there have never really been great DC movies, There've been really great DC television shows and cartoons, but as far as movies, no.
Nope. And I know we're getting off track,
Right.
but I watched the Wonder Woman, the newest Wonder Woman. The first one was awesome. The second one, I was just like, what is this? Is this a
Yeah.
rom-com or I
I
mean,
tried watching that one, and I ended up falling asleep. Like, there are
well,
some movies that I end up
you
watching
did the
just like
right
on
thing by
the.
falling asleep.
Yeah. There are some movies that I end up just watching like on a plane, and I'm like, yeah, this was the right like environment to watch this movie. Just on a plane. I didn't have to pay for it. It's entertaining enough for, like 20 or 30 minutes before I finally just conk out, go to sleep,
Yeah. But anyway,
But yeah, back to this Concrete Cowboy movie. Like it's a really good movie, and it's about this young man who is like misbehaving and gets kicked out of school, and his mom sends him to live with his father in Detroit. No, not in Detroit, in Philly for the summer. He's from Detroit. And so, but his father is like this kind of urban cowboy, and he's a member of this group of urban cowboys who raise horses that the city no longer uses anymore for, as the city urbanized and mobilized and kind of industrialized, Black communities actually took control of these horses and raised them. And now there are Black communities who raise these cowboy or raise these horses in urban cities, like in
Wow.
the cities.
That sounds
This is actually
great.
like real, like this is actually a real thing that happened. This you can actually go read about it. These urban cowboys are called, sometimes they're called Black cowboys or ghetto cowboys, but the movie is based on a book actually called Ghetto Cowboys, which is based on true events. And the guy's father, they talk about why the Black community were asked to kind of to break the horses by white people, generations ago, because they the white slave owners, like and white kind of people in power realized that Black people from Africa, the African slaves, they were more successful at breaking horses. And one of the women who's one of these cowboys, she says, well, the thing about what white people do is that they think that breaking a horse is about breaking the spirit of the animal, getting it to realize that its only way to survive is to submit. Whereas Black people realize, because we've gone through, she kind of implies, because we've gone through this same type of brutality, we realize that the real way to break a horse is through love, to show it that you will always care for it, that you will always be there for it, and that it can trust in you. You know what I mean? And that's how we break horses, and that is why we're more successful at kind of breaking and domesticating these horses. And it was
Wow.
such a powerful like statement, where she's of course talking about these horses, but she's not just talking about the horses, right? She's talking
Right.
about something much more. And that's what is also missing from policing. You know, it's the police kind of have this mentality of like, you know, we've got to protect the innocent and then break the will of those of the bad guys. You know, I'm like, one, like we said last week, you don't always know who the bad guys are. It's not always black and white. And two, you catch more flies with honey. You don't break the you try and break the will of people. We're here. You know, you try and break our will, we're just gonna be here. We're just gonna get worse and worse, you know? What you should do is reach out to us with love, you know, and show us that you care about us and that you're always going to care about us, right?
Yes.
Not that I'm implying that white people should have power over black people, but in terms of how police do their policing, they do have some level of power and authority over us, right?
Yes, and we have to they we have to be treated like full and equal citizens. It's we're not runaway slaves anymore. You don't get to break us. Really, I mean I completely what you were saying about the way that they were conditioning the horses, like that really resonated with me because it's more like a partnership when you're with a horse, you know, like you're doing stuff together. You're not, you know, just beating it down. Come on, horse, let's,
They
yeah.
show that. There's actually a good scene in the movie. And I'm not giving out any spoilers here. It's just one kind of scene that the boy, I can't remember his, well, his name, the character's name is Cole. I can't remember the actor's name, but Cole's father bought a horse shortly before he got there. And it's like this wild horse. No one can tame it. No one can really domesticate it. And Cole goes out one night and he has this horrible night and he's locked out of his father's house because his father locks the door at a certain time, you know? So he's trying to find a place to sleep. So he sleeps in the stable with his horse. And everybody wakes up the next morning and they're like so surprised. They're like, this is your horse. You're the only person that this horse has let close to you. This is now your horse, you know, it's
Wow.
chosen you, right? And there's a scene a little bit later where one of like this horse gets out of the stable, it breaks out of the stable, and it's just going buck wild in this baseball field, you know? And there's a whole group of people watching, they're all afraid, and it's just freaking out. And so all of the cowboys of these stables, they all kind of go together, they link arms, you know, and they just kind of surround it. They give it a lot of space, but they surround it. They don't charge at it or they don't try and shoot at it or anything. They just kind of link arms, surround it, and they're all trying to like be really calm and talk it down and talk it down. And then they look at Cole and they say, Cole, you're the one that it will let close to it. Go up, here's the reins, connect the reins to it, and then you gotta jump onto it. And they're like, you know, it's gonna buck at you. You know, once you jump on, it's gonna buck at you because he's freaking out right now. That's okay. If he bucks at you and you fall off, that's okay. Just be calm, get back on him, and then start rubbing his like neck, you know? And that's exactly what happens. And they calm the horse down and he's able to ride it, you know, back to the
Wow.
stable.
Oh, I can't wait
And
to see this movie.
it's
It
so
sounds
good.
really
It's such a
nice.
great movie. And there's so much more to it, but it really is, you know, you can tell that they wrote this movie or that this movie is not, there's more to it than just like the relationship between these cowboys and these horses, right? It is really talking about how black people love and how we love each other and how we exist within our society as well. And, you know, I think if you're a white person and you don't understand the problems that we have with policing, watch this movie and you'll kind of, at least through allegory, see what some of the point is, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I think in some ways that's the it's a difference in I don't, you know, as far as Americans and culture, like the difference between black and white, it's not that great in some respects, you know, especially being overseas. You see Americans, and we're all kind of the same. Like, there's no, it's kind of weird, like, you know, in a certain way. We have the same proclivities, let's just say, of how we do things. But there's a real difference between, I think, like the caring for each other aspect, you know, somehow Or in on the main. I'm not going to say every black person is like that, because you can watch Fox News and see plenty of black people that
Right.
would
Yeah.
spit in your face before they would help you.
Yeah. I can
That's
think of at least two right now. Yeah.
yeah. So that's but I mean, I don't know. It just when I grew up, where I grew up, and this is just a random sort of random example. I had a car accident, and it was about. I'm gonna say it was basically about a block before my home. Oh, wait. All right. Someone is trying to message me, or trying to call me. Sorry about that. And I had an accident, and it was maybe about 2 blocks from my house, and everybody knew me. You know, I mean, I'd been living in the same neighborhood since I was 3 or 4 years old. So everybody knew me, and everyone came out to like take care of me. I mean, the police were there, the police came, and I mean, but everybody like went out of their way to like take care of me. And I can't imagine something like that happening anywhere I've lived since then,
I
where.
think that, yeah, I think that's a really good point because, I grew up between a few different like hometowns, and the hometown where I was actually born, where my great grandparents lived, everyone knew who my great grandparents were. They were Early B and Walter Jemison. That's who they were in Moss Point, Mississippi. And Walter's name, his nickname around the town was Good Buddy. And he was called Good Buddy because he was this type of guy, like anything you need, it didn't matter who you were, anything you need, he would either give it to you if he had it, or he would help you get it if he didn't, and it didn't matter what it was. He was always there for you. He would lend you gas money if you needed it. He would give you the shirt off his back if you needed it. If you needed something, you could go to Good Buddy and he would get it for you. And to the point where, like, even to this day, I walk around and people, I don't have his same last name. I have my father's name. But when I tell people, yeah, I'm Good Buddy's grandson, or I'm Walter Jemison's grandson, they're like, oh yeah, come by anytime. You always got a place. You always got a seat at the table. You can always come by and get a plate. Because they're like, yeah, Good Buddy helped me when I needed it. And my great grandfather was the type of person who helped people even when it cost him something, because for him, the reward was so of just helping someone and seeing someone being able to get their needs met were much higher than any costs, and that was something that was within my great grandfather, inside of my great grandmother too. I think both of them were that way, and they really taught our family to be that way, to where nowadays, like you, I can bring over someone I just met. I remember taking people home from college, and my great grandma was a candy lady. And she would always make sure that they could bring home a bag of candy for them, and they would try and pay for it. She was like, no, like you came, you're a guest, all that kind of stuff. Like, black love, I don't think people realize how unconditional it is, and I think it comes from when you've dealt with generations of oppression and brutality, you learn to give and take love wherever you can and in any way you can, and as compassionately as you can. We love and we love hard. And I think, I just don't think white society really understands that, because we're still segregated to a huge degree as well, in the US. Because I know I've had white friends who like are really surprised. Even when I'm away, I tell them, like, hey, if you need anything, you can always call my grandma. Like, she lives 10 minutes away. And they're like, no, it's weird. Like, and I'm like, it's not weird for us. Like, I have friends, like, or I have cousins whose friends have come over, even when my cousins aren't there. Like, it's normal for us, it's just
To look after people
right.
if their people are not there to help them. Like
Right.
that's the that is sort of the black cultural ethic, you know,
Right.
that I remember growing up, like we always had guests at our house. I don't know any other way to put it. Like people who would come to visit from other places, or they're looking for jobs or whatever, and they just come and live at our house for a while until they found what they were looking for or whatever, you know, moved on. It was I can't always say it was my favorite thing, but I don't know if you grow up like that, helping people, it just sticks with you, you know? So if I have, I like to help people too. Like, because in a way we're all we've got. And I don't mean that just for black people. I mean that as all people. Like, you've only got this group of people that you know or that are around you. And yes, you have governments and all businesses and everything, but when it comes down to it, you only have your friends and your family to really look after, to actually care about you. And so, yeah, you have to care about your friends and your family, which you have to do. Otherwise, I mean, it would leave me feeling empty, honestly, not to care about people.
And I think as black people too, I think black people, like we have learned a healthy dose of skepticism against certain types of institutions, right? Against police, against, like certain like government institutions, stuff like that, because of the history of how they've
Juvenile
treated us, like,
courts, for
right, juvenile
sure.
courts, right? But as well, like when it comes to the individual people, that's another point, like no one is saying that we don't like individual people, like police officers as individual people. Like I have, there are definitely, well, I don't think we have any police officers in my family, but well, no,
Mine
we used
either.
to actually. We used to have some correctional officers in my family. But like, my family, it's a small town, but there's a close relationship between my family and the police. Granted, the dynamics of policing is different there because it's a small town and all the police who are in the police department are from the town. So,
Yeah, it's a
that
difference.
makes it different.
Yeah.
But like, my family, like they don't have anything against police officers. The military. We have lots of people in the military in my family. My family is a type of family. We're not bootlickers, but we do, we appreciate the service that people give to our community. But we expect those people in our community to, or those people who are serving the community, to serve with the needs of our community in mind. You know what I mean? And to really honor our community itself. But yeah, like we love all people. You know what I mean? In my family. Yeah, I'm just. But I think again, like that's what's missing from policing, and in that, in black society, we have a tendency to kind of give people the benefit of the doubt, which is why, I think is part of the reason why you don't see a lot of black police officers, popping off their guns or their tasers,
Yeah.
as much. It's not the case that there aren't bad black police officers. There are. But in my experience, black police officers tend to be much more slow to use force than white police officers. And I think that that's because, like, kind of inherently in black culture, what we've kind of taken on as part of our cultural DNA is that, we try and give people the benefit of the doubt, and we try and see the good in people, even when they're, even when you're called to a situation where it seems hostile and blah, 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 whatever. You try and see the good in people first, right? Which then makes you react to these situations differently.
Yes, for sure. I think that, I mean, I don't have any police officers in my family. I don't think, if they are, they're kind of hiding. But I don't think so. But I do have military people in my family. And yeah, I mean, I mean, I've told the story before. I don't hate want to hate the police, but I also don't want to have to worry about my friends and family constantly, whether they would do something wrong, you know, and then get shot or killed by the police for basically nothing. I still, just going back to the George Floyd situation, I still would like to know, was the $20 bill that the clerk thought was counterfeit, was it actually counterfeit? I mean, I know that that's like super petty and down in the weeds, but did you actually, what you called the police for, was it real?
I think that, and then it's also like, man, I cannot imagine a black police officer pulling up to that scene and being like, oh yeah, this is worth me tackling this dude down to the ground and like kneeling on his back for 10 minutes. You know, I cannot imagine a black police officer who would be like, yeah, that is what, you know, this potentially counterfeit $20 bill calls for. I think, I don't know, maybe I'm speaking for myself, but I feel like if I were like to roll up to a situation like that and I'm a cop, I'm like, hey man, give me the $20 bill, give me the 20, or I don't even know, like, I don't even know if I would cite him for that. Like,
yeah, you know what I mean? I don't know.
I think
either.
I would just be like, dude, just give me the 20, like, you know, or throw it away. Like you can't go around here with counterfeit 20s. Mainly because I'm like, it ain't my job to sit here and try and like investigate whether or not there's a counterfeit scheme. If he had one fake $20 bill on him, my assumption would probably be that he got it from somewhere else and just didn't know.
Or not that he's manufacturing counterfeit right. bills and all he could come up with was 120. You know?
Like, yeah. It would be different if he had like a wallet of 20s. And then at that point, I'd be like, okay.
Okay,
there might be something here. We need you to come downtown. But like if you had one $20 bill, like, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm sorry, man. It looks like somebody got you.
Yeah, because that's probably what it was. That, you know, right. I mean, if you go to a store and they're constantly turning out, you know, taking in money, putting it in their vaults, taking it back out for different cashier drawers and things like that, where did the money come from?
Right. Right. And I've worked in not in retail, but I've worked in like fast food and restaurants and stuff, taking money from people all the time. You know, like I don't think I ever really checked for anything under 100. You know, like if you were to come in with a $100 bill, yeah, I would get the little marker because, yeah, whatever. 20s and stuff, I'm not even sure they checked it. Well, I guess if they do check it for businesses, if you come in with like a big bag, you know, of money that needs to be deposited and stuff. But like, you know, go to your local bank and give them a $20 bill and see if they're going to check it. Probably not.
Probably not. It's not even worth the effort to do so. And this is why George Floyd was killed.
Right.
This is why, for a 20 that may or may not have been counterfeit.
Right.
And that's wrong. Like you can't. We have to get our priorities straight as a nation, as a people. Like, what is important? Some stuff isn't as important as, you know, like, I have to go back to that poor child that was shot, the 13-year-old that was shot in Chicago. Why was it important for you to chase him down?
Right.
I just don't, you know, some
and
of these situations
the girl,
I don't
the same
understand.
Same day, an hour after the verdict, Michaela, what's her name?
I saw, I don't remember her name, but yeah, I saw the video. It's like you didn't actually have to shoot her either.
My thing is, I'm like, he had just gotten out of the car. Like, he had not, from a procedural standpoint, he had not taken, like, a survey of the situation. He had no idea what was going on. He had just gotten out of his own car. And, I saw in the video she was charging at someone else. The story that I have read was that she was the one who called the police. Because like these girls came to her house to jump her or something like that, or to confront her about something. So my thought is, I'm like, she could have been well within her rights to have been defending herself. You know what I mean? If they came to her, I don't know the story, whatever, but that's what the story that I have been reading. And so if that's true, I'm like, she could have been well within her rights to defend herself. If people came to her, she's the one who called the cops. This cop didn't take any time to try and get a feel of the situation, to try and figure out the lay of the land, to try and figure out what is the conflict going on. He just saw someone running and decided to shoot. I'm like, this is why, one, you're supposed to have a non-lethal option that you're not supposed to be able to confuse for you anyway.
Yes.
But like, this is why the whole point of having non-lethal options. And two, it's like, dude, like, okay, like just, I'm not saying that cops just let people beat on each other or whatever, but he could have, you know, just kind of stepped over and be like, oh, wait, I'm here now, I'm the cop, wait, tell me what's going on.
That would have been the easiest thing to do, is to assert your authority, not come out, you know, pistols blazing.
Right.
Like, it's not, we're not living in an action film or a war movie or any of that. Like, and I think that I think that media has portrayed police in a certain way, and that now the police are reflecting that media portrayal. You know, the kind of like, I mean, okay, Dirty Harry was a vigilante, but you know, just kind of like, yeah, you know, make my day. I mean, remember that the guy that was at the soldier at the gas station,
Yeah, that
and
was
she's like, you're
Lieutenant
gonna
Nazar.
ride the lightning.
Right.
Like what? What movie is that from? You
Right.
know?
Right.
And I don't watch movies like that, but
But that's the
I
thing. I'm like, this isn't an action movie. You know, this is real
yeah.
life. And when you fire those shots, they can't be undone. You know, they can't be. You know, this 16-year-old girl is never going to get up again. George Floyd is never gonna get up again. Adam Toledo is never gonna get up again.
And if you think about the number of people that have been killed by gun violence, by not just police, but you know, other mass shooters or boyfriends or whatever, you know, all the people that have been shot, killed, threatened in America, we have a whole population of people that is probably experiencing trauma. I mean, you know, because it's not just when somebody gets shot, it's not just that person that feels the trauma of this. It's all the people that saw it. It's all the people in their family, their friends, even people that are just, you know, tangentially related to somebody, you know, like that guy came and got a cup of coffee at my store every day, you know, like it's, and when you find out these things, it's super stressful. And if you think about all the children who've been doing active shooter drills at school and may have experienced school shootings, you have a lot of people that are traumatized by this stuff. So we have to change it for
We
sure.
do. The girl's name is Micaiah Bryant, so that I can be clear.
Okay.
But you know, that's something that I also thought about, like, too, is we live in a society that is just okay with traumatizing people or allowing people to be traumatized
Yes.
without any sort of support. You know, I was watching another video. This was a black woman who, the day of the trial, or not the trial, but the day that the verdict was supposed to, was announced, before the verdict was announced, you know, she got out of her car, she blocked a road, and she sat in the road until she heard the verdict of Derek Chauvin. And you know, some people called the police, and this other black woman came up, because this the woman who was sitting on the ground, you know, she wasn't yelling, she wasn't threatening anyone. She just said, I'm sitting here, leave me alone, I'm sitting here until they call out, they give the verdict. And the police were like getting ready to go and like basically handle this woman and pick her up and probably take her off to jail. And so this other black woman stepped in and said, hey, I'm a social worker, don't do that, I will talk to her, don't do that, back up, I will talk to her. And it seems like she's having a mental episode, like, back up. And so this other black woman came and sat down next to her. She's like, hey, what's your name? This is my name. Is it okay if I sit next to you? Can I ask you why you're sitting? And she told her why. She was like, okay, do you want to talk about that? And the woman said, no. She said, that's okay. Can I just sit here with you? And the woman said, yeah. And she said, can I offer you some water? She said, no. And it was just that. And it was, yeah, like 20 minutes of this woman just kind of sitting in the road and blocking traffic. But like, I would rather that to happen than the alternative of her possibly having lost her life because she was clearly having a trauma reaction to this trial, you
Yeah.
know, over Derek Chauvin. And I'm like, at this point, we have seen so much trauma as a community, as black people. Of course, like these types, like we're having trauma reactions at this
Yeah.
point. Let the woman sit in the street. Let her do, look, if this is what it takes for her to feel okay in that moment, then maybe that's something that we should let happen just for right now. You know what I mean? Or at least have someone who's trained to be able to deal with her trauma come out and help her work through this, rather than bringing police in to just brutalize her, you know, who will
Yes.
do nothing but brutalize her. And
Yes, that's the whole idea about defunding the police,
Right.
to send resources to some other areas so that we can deal with some of the issues of trauma, all sorts of psychological problems or drug use or whatever it is, that you don't need the police because they don't know how to handle this kind of stuff. They can,
Right.
honestly, they can just barely handle the stuff that they're supposed to do.
Right.
So that's we need to have people that are trained to deal with all these things and not just throw police, like, if you don't give it up, we're going to take you to jail. You know, if you're having a psychological episode, like, that doesn't even probably resonate with you at all. You're just like,
Right.
okay, whatever, you
Right.
know. I'm already in hell,
Right.
so like it
Yeah,
can't,
that's something I
yeah.
like think about all the times, you know, like I've had some pretty bad, for me personally, I've had some pretty bad anxiety attacks. Like I get really bad anxiety attacks and panic attacks when I'm under a lot of stress. And when I'm in those moments, I get this like really like huge, like this really, really strong tunnel vision, you know, and I can only see the things that are going wrong. And I can only see like the thing that I'm kind of like focusing on, right?
Right.
Everything else doesn't matter. No, nothing else is going on to me. And I'm like, I don't want, I hope that I am never in a situation where that happens to me in public
Yeah.
and where like police are called.
Of course.
Because, you know, like luckily for me, I'm able to kind of see when it's about to happen before it happens and get myself into, you know, a private place. And that's what I've always done. But like, you know, what if I wasn't able to do that? You
Yeah.
know, and that's
Yeah.
something that I hope, you know, this trial itself will not do that, but hopefully the things that will come out of it, you know, the fact that one, we're showing that you can be held responsible for taking a life even when you have a badge. We're showing that you know, we do expect police officers to some degree meet people where they're at. We also do, we're also seeing some shifting. You know, we had the George Floyd in policing act, our reform in policing act that was passed by the House this past week,
That's right.
as well, that ends qualified immunity, or I think it attempts to end qualified immunity. I don't know how that would actually play out in reality, but the wording seems to end qualified immunity.
Yeah,
I
that's
read the act.
a great bill. It covers a lot of
Right.
territory.
And it really important for our Black community, especially our Black women, it closes what it calls the law enforcement loophole, and makes it so that you cannot give consent to law enforcement for sexual acts. So if you are a law enforcement officer or someone acting under the color of the law, as the bill says, that you like any if you do have sexual contact with someone while you're in that position, that it is automatically considered statutory rape, which
Well,
I think is really important because
that
how
is.
many of our Black women have been racially like have been sexually brutalized or sexually assaulted or molested by
Yes.
police, you know, and then they
Yes.
don't get believed because the police say, well, they consented to it, blah, blah,
Which is just some nonsense. Like,
blah. Right.
that is, oh my God, okay, that is misogyny in
Yeah.
a, you know, the
Oh,
same,
yeah.
100%. It's the same thing, like, with slavery, you know, you can't. If you're a slave, you don't really have a choice.
Right.
So
If you're a
you're
slave,
not having
you
an
can't consent.
affair, you're being raped.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
Yeah, for
Yeah.
sure. Well, we are coming up to the end of our time. I'm just so glad that this trial is over and this man was found guilty, and I don't know if you saw the look on his face while the verdict was being
I
read.
did. I did.
Like, he was about to lose it. Okay, he
Right.
was about to lose it. I can't even, he did not expect to be found
I
guilty.
think I have to imagine I think he expected a mistrial, which I did too. I think he had to have expected a mistrial at least. You know, I only revert like want to reiterate, you know, the words of Al Sharpton when he spoke that day. You know, he said, we don't celebrate this. None of us are happy about this. He said, we don't celebrate a man going to jail. We would rather just have George Floyd back with us, right?
Yes.
And I felt that so much for me because I'm like, I'm not happy. I feel a bit of vindication. You know, I feel a bit of accountability and a little bit of hope that we will continue to progress. But I don't feel happy because George Floyd died still, you know?
Yep. He's still dead, and we're left with, I mean, you know, we're left with having to pick up the pieces
right
from this. I mean, I can't even imagine. You know, I didn't watch a lot of the trial. Like, I only saw little snippets of people testifying and things like that, and it seemed to me that all the witnesses for the prosecution, all of them were totally, like, just destroyed.
Yeah.
They, you know, and I hope this gives them something, you know, some feeling that, I mean, it's never going to be enough because the man is dead.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, so, that was what Keith Ellison said as well. You know, it's not justice because justice implies restoration, right?
Right.
But we'll see what happens. You know, and next time we meet, we'll talk about. We'll continue our talk about, you know, misogyny and homophobia in the Black
yes.
community.
I'm so looking forward to talking about that. Not
yeah.
not because it's my favorite topic or anything. It's
no,
just that
it's,
I have a lot of things to say on that subject.
It's one that doesn't get talked about enough.
Nope, it doesn't, because everybody wants to make it seem like all Black men are so super woke. And
right.
and they'll... they're not.
Right. Well,
yeah.
it's been good talking to you, Angela, today.
Yeah. It's great to talk to you, too. And thank you so much, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Yeah, see you next week.